Welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 40. I'm your host, Laura. I'm here this week with Tilly.
Hi.
Are you eating food?
Mm-hmm.
What are you eating? Blah, 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 blah.
Mugshot.
You're eating mugshot pasta thing. We're also here with Gate this week.
Hello. Do you just call me Gate?
I said Kate.
No, it sounded like Gate.
Okay, I have a blocked nose, okay? I'm sorry if my words don't sound right today. We're here with Kate.
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
And we're here with Gemma, woo!
I feel like I want to go by Kemma now.
Shut Kemma. Up, I'm ill.
Kate and Kemma.
Shut up, I was going to swear at you all. Shut up. So, woo, we're here, we've got geeky stuff to talk about. We've actually got everyone here this week, yay!
Yay!
So, what do we want to start off talking about? Who has something they're itching to discuss?
Me.
Probably. Go on, Kate, now do you want to talk about?
Now I have to go back in the chat and look at what I was actually going to. Oh, I found a cool thing. It's just like a Game of Thrones kind of 5 minutes, if that's okay, because there's a few things. I found a really cool podcast that I think everyone should listen to called Storm of Spoilers. And it's basically a podcast about Game of Thrones that went at the same pace as the TV show. But it was like all spoilers allowed, like book spoilers, theories, forums, wikis, everything, nothing was off limits in terms of, oh, I don't want to spoil it for so-and-so who's listening. Like, there's a woman on it. The thing is, there's a woman on it called Joanna, and she's amazing. And she's on a couple of other Game of Thrones podcasts that my boyfriend had been like, oh, you should listen to this. But she's on it with a guy who's kind of not really the host, but I think because she's read the books and he hasn't. So he's kind of our exposition. You know, we're supposed to be him and listen to what she says. But he is so annoying and so boring and she's amazing. And I wish that, like, I mean, it talks a lot because it's started alongside season 4 of the Game of Thrones. And there's a lot of sexual assault in that, very controversial scenes. And he's just an idiot. Like, the stuff he says, I want to reach out and just be like, shut up.
So do you basically want this podcast, but with two versions of the same woman being the two hosts?
Yeah.
Do you want to replace him with another version of her?
It wouldn't work if it was just her, because you do need that exposition and him going, oh, hang on, what do you mean by that? And like, oh, what, you know, I've not read that, what's that about? Which works really well, but he just shouldn't be allowed to give his opinion on anything. He should interview her for an hour, basically. But yeah, it's called Storm of Spoilers and I would recommend it. And the other thing is, I've been rereading Game of Thrones, the books, recently, and very quickly, because I'm basically only reading Sansa's chapters, a bit of Catelyn. I read Ned and Arya's in the first one, and Daenerys, because it's a good story, Daenerys is. But so I'm reading them. It's taking me like an hour to read each book. But I'm reading it, and this is kind of just plug promo. At Nine Mods this year, it is now confirmed. On the Friday, I'm going to be doing a talk.
Yay!
Woo!
Thank you. And the name of it is called Lemon Cakes and Courtesy, A Defense of Sansa Stark.
What? Ooh, nice.
Okay. I'm also making some lemon drizzle tray bake so that when people come, they can have some cake.
When is this? I need to come to this.
It's Friday at 5 o'clock. 5 until 6:15.
I will have to double check my schedule, because as the head of the LGBT track, I'm doing a lot most of the days of that convention. But also, I need to talk to you about coming on to my comics panel that I'm doing.
Okay.
You need to come be on the gay comics panel.
I'm not on a I've not really signed up for as much stuff as I did last year, but I think what will happen again with last year, it will be like, oh, we need someone for this panel, and I'll be like, okay,
yeah,
I'll do it, because I can do stuff, you know, I don't mind doing stuff with absolutely no preparation.
Well, there's some very cool people on our LGBT comics panel, so you should come join that.
Yeah, I was on an LGBT comics panel last year that was quite good, and we ended up talking about Captain America and what his Tinder would be. That was good. I think there was lots of like euphemisms and stuff going on. But in terms of this, yeah, I'm quite excited, because I did a solo talk last year about cosplay and I enjoyed it, so I'm not too nervous about that aspect of it.
Yeah, if you've done a solo one, you can do anything now.
Yeah, I feel like, because I mean, it is a lot scarier than doing a panel where you can obviously be a bit quiet for 5 minutes. Not that I've ever wanted to be quiet for more than 5 minutes, obviously, as we know. But yeah, it's going really well, the preparation for the talk, and I'm finding a lot of stuff. Like, has everybody here read Game of Thrones or seen the television show?
I've seen the TV show up to date, but I've refused to read the books.
I would say, what, now, in terms of season 4 and 5, the books are way better. And I hate those comparisons. You know I hate going, the books are better. But I do feel, and this is the thing in Storm of Spoilers, the books are way, way more nuanced in terms of what's good and bad. Like, whereas in the show, it's like Tyrion. Oh, Tyrion's amazing. Tyrion has to be the good guy. So, like, in the episode of the podcast I was listening to in season 4, there's a character that Tyrion kills, basically, and they villainized that character like loads and loads before their death. Whereas in the book, liked that character. But they were like, no, Tyrion has to still be our protagonist. Yeah. And so for me, the books are way more nuanced, and it's the same with reading the stuff on Sansa. She's so much more complex in the books. But Ned, oh my God, just, I want to punch him in the face. He's so irritating and so stupid. But I'm enjoying rereading them way, way more than I thought. So everybody should come to my panel. The only thing I'm worried about is, as I think I've mentioned in the past, I have cut people out of my life for their opinions on Sansa Stark, and I'm worried. I think we're gonna have to, if anybody can, anyone who's listening, can you please come up with some questions that I may not want to answer to prepare me?
I have some of those. I can ask you some tough questions to prepare.
I don't want to get upset and look unprofessional. And I don't want to just say to someone, well, you're wrong, even though obviously they probably are. And I can't, though I'm sure Tilly will be there as my muscle.
Yeah. I'll stand behind you.
Nine worlds, hating everyone.
Yeah.
Thing. But yeah, so that's the bit I am quite nervous about, just because I, like, what if some, like, dude bro comes in and is like, oh, Sansa's so annoying, I hope she dies. And I'll just, like, cry. Be like, you can't have any more lemon cakes.
That's okay. Like, stay calm. If that happens, you stay calm. And I'll sneak up behind him and kill him.
Just be like, Valar Morghulis.
Valar Morghulis. See, sorry. Nine Worlds is probably one of the only conventions you could get away with just walking around being like, Valar Morghulis! Maybe. And a lot of people would agree with you.
Valar Dohaelis. Ooh.
Oh, when I was in Sweden, the only time I have been to Sweden, I was in Stockholm, and I was selling t-shirts, and a guy had a like Winter is Coming kind of t-shirt, and I said to him Valar Morghulis, and he just went Valar Dohaeris, and I was like, that was the coolest fucking thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
Did I tell you guys about my experience at Arlanda Airport at passport control?
Was this a Valar Morghulis type moment?
Yes, because I have a Valar Morghulis t-shirt that I picked up at the Game of Thrones exhibit when it came to Stockholm, and I was wearing, it's a nice traveling t-shirt. So when I came back from the UK, I think it was when I'd been over for a funeral or something, I was wearing the shirt, and I went up to passport control because UK's outside of Schengen. So I showed my passport to the Swedish guy, and he looks at it and then looks at my t-shirt, and like, and he just says Valar Morghulis, and I just froze. I forgot to say Valar Dohaelis because I was like, oh my goodness, the passport control guy is like saying all men must die. I'm like,
Yeah, that's it. Those are the coolest moments when people in like official positions know about cool stuff. Like, yeah. I was flying into LA for E3, and like I had to hand over my like a letter, my visa waiver letter or whatever it was, and like I'd written on my some bit of paperwork that I was here for work, and it was like, "Are you here for E3?" And I was like, "Yes." And it was like, "Oh, what site are you with?" I was like, "I'm with Destructoid," and he was like, "Oh yeah, I read Destructoid. What are you looking forward to seeing at E3 this week?" And I was just like, you're a middle-aged man. You're not meant to know about video game conventions.
That's amazing.
I did not know quite how to respond to him.
It's always great when you've got somebody in that position who can refuse you entry to, like, in my case, the country I call home. And he's just like, Valar Morghulis.
I love finding fellow nerds, though. I mean, I've scared a lot of teenage girls at work because I do look older than I am. Like, I'm 21 and I probably look sort of 27-30. Somebody once left a comment at work, like a nice comment saying, oh, this woman helped me, and said I was either in my 30s or 40s.
You don't look more than say 24-25 at most.
I was like, really?
You look maybe mid-20s at most.
When I was 18, somebody like said, oh, how old are you? And I was like, well, how old do you think I am? And they were like, oh, 30, 35. So anyway, at work, obviously younger people, you know, you tend to look at people older than you and assume they are like much older because they're older than you, therefore they're old. So there are, you know, we have girls coming in 14, 15, they've got like Supernatural t-shirts on, or like a girl with a Deathly Hallows t-shirt on or Avengers t-shirts on. You know, we're at a cinema, so there's things that they're coming in for. And I always say like, oh, I like your t-shirt. And a couple of the girls, if they chat, I might recommend, say, Nine Worlds and be like there were some people with Supernatural things. And it was like the day after the Supernatural track had been announced. So I was like, come to Nine Worlds. You know, it's something that I think you'll be interested in. And I know that it's a very family orientated and very safe convention. If I had a child of between 14 and 15, I would be perfectly happy to let them go. And they just looked absolutely terrified because they looked at me and it is that kind of thing like, but you're old. What do you know about these things? And I just was like, oh,
like, I'm not that old.
I know, I'm 21. I'm young. But they kind of were like, oh, that sounds good. But also like, mum, this person is creeping me out.
It's like, no, I'm hip. I'm on a podcast. Yeah, oh I God. Am with the times.
That's what I would say. I'd be like, I have a tumble, you know.
It's called a tumbler. There's an R at the end of it.
Like, see, I miss the days when it was called a tumble log. And I still refer to it as a tumble log, and I feel ancient for doing so.
And now they just call it a tumbler, don't they?
Yeah.
But I now find, if I'm talking about, as in the glass, a tumbler glass, I look at the spelling, and I'm like, is that right?
Oh,
it's so pathetic.
Oh goodness. So what else do we have on the topic list for this week? I want to talk about a video game, but it's one that those of you who don't play video games might find interesting.
Oh, me and Tilly frick up.
Yeah. Ooh.
Tilly's you're probably a COD geek. What Sorry? Are you talking about, Kate?
Oh yeah, Kate plays Call of Duty.
Yeah, what? You're into your COD blobs.
I go, it's my motto in life is go hard or go home. So it's either nothing or it's Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed.
I say Tilly's probably tired of hearing me talk about this because I've talked about this on like every podcast I've been for about a week. But I want to talk about it here as well. So you're going to hear about it again. So this is a game that just came out like in the last week called Her Story. And you basically play someone at a computer in the mid-90s in Portsmouth in England who is like trying to go through a series of videotapes from a murder that happened in 1994, I think it is. And the way it's all done is that basically this computer system is from just when the police system was going from VHS tapes to digital files for their videos for archiving. And as such, the video files are tagged, but they're not like in any kind of easily found system. You've got to search for them by like keywords. And the whole thing is going through, like, it starts with this little search bar in this database that has just the word murder ready to search. And from there you watch clips and you're like, okay, well, from those clips I got the name of the person who was murdered, I got the name of the person who's in this clip, I got a hint at the murder weapon, what thing do I start searching for? And it's just this whole interactive rabbit hole of finding what you're interested in and going investigating those bits of the murder and trying to piece together, like, okay, what happened here? Do I think this person's guilty or innocent? And it's all done with like live action clips of this woman who, she's a fantastic actress. She's absolutely superb in the role, and it's a really creepy, twisty, turny mystery narrative. I think it's really good. So yeah, it's an open-ended narrative. There's no set end point. It is just when you think that you have found enough information that you are happy that you've got a satisfying resolution, that's when you get to see the credits roll. It is just, do you think that you are satisfied with what you found and the ending and the conclusions you've drawn? Then if you're confident in that, end the story here. And it's a really, 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 really solid video game. So yeah, it's a thing you should all play because I think you'd all find it interesting.
I might play through it tomorrow because I've got 2 days off work.
Yeah, do it. I think you'd like it.
Okay.
Yay! I will. Woo, so that's my recommendation of video games this week. Woo! What else do we have this week? Because that was a very short topic.
I forgot to mention this in the topic list. Can I stick in anyway?
Yeah, go ahead. What do you want to talk about?
I couldn't sleep last night. And I've got this game on my phone. It's like, it's a version of Bejeweled. It's really cool. I just thought I'd recommend it for anyone who like struggles with anxiety or anything like that.
What's it called?
Bejeweled.
Oh, when you said a version of Bejeweled, I thought you meant like it was called something else. It wasn't actually Bejeweled.
No, it's called it, but it's different.
Okay, how's it different? How's it different from Bejeweled?
If you play the Zen mode, then you can set it to have little like positive affirmations at the bottom.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and then...
So what sort of things does it come up with at the bottom while you're playing?
At the moment, I've got it set to self-confidence. So it says things like, I have value and I have the confidence to achieve my goals and things like that.
Can we just also, like, every video game maker ever who puts Zen modes on otherwise competitive or fast games, we love you.
Yes.
So much.
It's why I love Nintendo and the yarn games, where it's like, yeah, you can play with some challenge, or you can play on the mode where it's like, hey, here's a beautiful looking thing and you can't die, and you can just go through listening to nice music and hear it, looking at nice visuals.
Well, that's the thing, I play Tetris quite a lot and I love it. I'm like getting quite good at it. I'm literally playing it right now as I'm speaking. But when it gets really fast at the end, I'm never going to improve that much that I can play it really, really quickly.
We got out of sync there.
Oh, it's fine.
Good enough. But there must be somewhere a Zen mode online. So if anybody knows of a Zen Tetris that doesn't speed up or doesn't speed up very much, or you can set the speed and then that's it.
You need a button that you can just be like, whoa, 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 slow down a little bit.
Yeah, and then I'll be able to play it. I'd rather get, rather than it being like, oh, how long can you last? I want it to be like, how many lines can you get or something. See, I'm a hardcore gamer.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this on the podcast before, so I won't linger on it, but this is what I get out of the Lego games as well. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned before, like, I'm still playing Lego Indiana Jones with my husband. And it's great.
Is that on Wii?
Sorry?
Is it on Nintendo Wii or is it on something else?
Probably. I mean, I know they brought them out on GameCube, for example. We're actually playing them on Steam.
Oh, okay. We've got it on Nintendo Wii somewhere. It was good.
And given that, like, if you die, it resets and just, like, you just respawn near to where you died. And it's all just about smashing Lego bits and building things and progress without much threat to it. And it's about, like, collection. And it's good for that. And it's also going to be shared as well, which can be welcome.
So, yeah. Anyway, so I wasn't done.
Oh, sorry.
You can set like audio modulation, so it like it modulates your breathing, and you have like a visual thing, so you can match your breathing to you've got the sound of someone breathing as well, so you can match your in breaths and your out breaths, and then you can set it to all these like. Different background sounds as well. Like my favorite one is rain in a forest.
Yeah.
But you can also have like the ocean and the wind and like loads of stuff. Okay, now I'm done.
White noise kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
It was really good. Like I played it for about 15 minutes because I went to bed at 9 and I didn't get to sleep until about 3, so I was literally lying in bed for 6 hours, and I played this game 15 minutes at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was asleep, like, out.
Now, see, talking about the complete opposite end of the spectrum, I've been playing a video game that is not calming in the slightest called Bloodborne this week, which I've played before, and I'm playing it through my second time now, and my goodness, it is a game where everything will kill you and kills you over and over, and I think I spent about 4 hours trying to get past the first boss.
Oh my god.
Because just everything was out to kill me, and that's not a fun game. It is rewarding when you make progress, but it is a stressful experience. That much is true.
That sort of game I physically can't play them. It's why I'm doing Cities Skylines Let's Plays, is because they have a similar, like, I'm told at least, it has like an ASMR kind of thing going on, given that there's traffic noises, and it's just a gentle hum and things. But I get too stressed out by like difficult games.
That's an interesting point, because this is kind of both for Laura and Gemma. With games like Bloodborne and, you know, like the kind of big mainstream games, at what point do you use walkthroughs, and if so, at what point? Like, you know, where you go online and somebody else has already gone through it and they're like, right, now you need to go left, now you need to do this.
I If I don't know how to get past something, I will only tend to go for a walkthrough if I've struggled to work out what the solution is for long enough that I'm annoyed, walked away from the game, come back to it the next day, still getting annoyed that I can't get past it. At that point, it's like, well, I just want to see more of the game. Sometimes I will then look at a walkthrough.
Okay.
Like, I will get frustrated with it twice before I go for a walkthrough.
I think I used to do similar, but I think my patience has worn dry, and it's partly because, basically, if I get frustrated with a game, I then like try to backtrack through the level because I'm looking for design cues. And actually, this does admittedly happen sometimes with the Lego games. There are some like hidden treasure chests, for example, for which there is absolutely no foreshadowing, and the level design has just failed. And at that point, I look up walkthroughs because I decide that the game has failed.
Well, not you. It's not your fault. Yeah. It's a bad game design.
Well, I've had to learn not to use walkthroughs as much as I would maybe naturally do so, just because so many of the games I play before they're released. Usually there's no walkthrough that exists when I play it. So I'm having to find like the three or four people that I know that also have the game early. And I'm like, do you know how to get past this bit? And they're like, no, we're stuck here as well. So yeah, I've had to learn not to use walkthroughs because sometimes, well, most of the games I play, walkthroughs don't exist when I play them, which is really sad.
I never thought of that. The fact that, because that's the thing, all the games I play, even stuff like Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty, they're old copies because I just can't afford... I don't play games as enough to be like... Advanced Warfare I will not get for another year, maybe 2 years. And so there's always walkthroughs available, and there's always, like, long walkthroughs, and people have done, you know, YouTube help things and stuff like that.
Well, see, those exist within 2 or 3 days of the game coming out, even. If
really?
You can afford to wait 2 or 3 days, obsessed people will create those lengthy crazy walkthroughs. Things.
And I suppose people who do it, you know, with every single game, and that's kind of their thing. And
yeah, and like they'll like have groups of people where it's like, okay, well, you write up this level, and I'll write up this level, and I'll do videos on this. And you get a team of 3 or 4 people that will, in a few days, like create an extensive walkthrough.
But I will say that me and Tilly are now hardcore gamers because what happened...
It was an advert for Criminal Case on TV.
On TV!
Yeah, but there have been adverts for Candy Crush on TV. I don't know if that makes you hardcore gamers.
But everybody's heard of Candy Crush. Not everyone's heard of our super cool hipster, like, not even mainstream thing, have they?
A lot of people play Criminal Case. It's good. Not as obscure as you think.
You should play it. It's amazing. Although the advert was like complete like BS. Like everything they showed on the advert does not happen in the game. It was like it made it look like actual CSI, and it's like, no, that's not how it works.
Oh, I downloaded the iOS version, so I might start playing this week.
Good, because it's amazing.
I got to the level with the crucifixion.
Oh,
and I couldn't stop laughing all the way through because it was just like, how am I drawing these conclusions? And like your partner's like, oh, I'm so glad I've got you. You're so clever. You're so smart coming up with all these ideas. I'm like, no, these are stupid ideas.
I will say that after that level, it just gets more and more ridiculous. And also for anybody who has taken our amazing glowing recommendations and is downloading this, the 11th case has a trigger warning for sexual assault, which is very interesting because I don't think there's an age rating. I don't know if there's an age rating on this game, and even if there is, it will be still, I don't know how difficult it is for people to actually like bypass the age ratings. And it's just like a mention of it, like nothing actually happens, they just mention it. But I mean, they swear all the time and stuff like that, and obviously it is quite gory and ridiculous. And there should be a trigger warning for, like, lack of logic.
Oh, burn.
I know, that was really...
I actually do need that, though. Like I said earlier, if the level design doesn't make sense, I just flip out.
So then they would think it would. They would be like, oh, of course it's going to make sense. We're so amazing at this.
Very, very true. So what else have we got up on the topic list? I think Tilly and Kate, I think you've both got a TV show you want to talk about this week.
And I think we agree on it based on what I've seen on Tilly's Twitter feed.
I'm so glad we agree. I was, because you didn't say anything.
I looked and I meant to, but then I was like, oh, we'll talk about it on the podcast. I did enjoy this season.
This season of
Orange is the New Black.
See, this is why I'm the host. I remember when you just don't mention what you're talking about.
next time don't mention it and we'll see if people can guess based on what we say.
Yeah, I did enjoy this season, but it was just quite fragmented. Like, there wasn't really a theme to tie it all together.
Yeah, they didn't have, like, I would say, like, a big bad. Like, we had in season two, we had the warden, and in season one, I guess we had Porn Stash, I guess. Yeah. But also, who here has watched all of Buffy?
I've watched most of Buffy.
Anybody else?
No, I only watched a couple of episodes.
All of you have disappointed me. But anyway, Buffy, aka the only decent thing Joss Whedon has ever done.
Probably quite accurate.
Yeah, and even then sometimes not that great. But every season had a theme, like acceptance, and, you know, this whole... They kind of only started really developing that way in season four, but, like, there's a whole... there's, like, season six is depression. Like, the entire thing is supposed to be about depression. And they've, you know, really strong themes. But yeah, I felt like Orange is the New Black, season three was good, but it kind of just felt like it was tiding over.
Yeah, it was just, it was quite aimless.
Yeah.
And then there were, what really annoyed me was there's this big scene at the end where everyone's all, like, really happy, and it's like, but then they've got so many storylines that they haven't solved.
And I think what they... that could have been really easily solved by having all those really happy scenes, which, and it was quite a nice scene.
Yeah.
But they should have then cut it where they, like, shot to the other people who were in trouble.
Yeah.
And then it would have been like, everyone's happy, but oh my God, there's all this drama still happening.
Yeah. So I've heard about that scene at the end, and I'm trying to work out how to voice my confusion without spoiling that scene, but...
Well, Gemma, are you going to watch it? Could we spoil it?
Probably not. I've got so many other things.
It doesn't feel like a big spoiler. To me, this doesn't feel like it would spoil the season. So, toward the end of the season, an electric fence goes down and everyone escapes the prison, only to play in some water and to not try and run away from prison. And
well, they know that they're going to get caught.
No,
like,
but that doesn't make sense to me. And you know why? Last season, someone successfully escaped from the prison and was not caught and was not brought back. Surely, if you get on the outside of those prison walls, someone out there is going to think, oh, so-and-so last season successfully ran away from prison and didn't get caught. Why aren't we trying that? I think particularly, like, the ones who've got, like, really long-term sentences. Why are you not running away? You're outside of the prison.
It is interesting, and the reason that they, I mean, obviously, if one of them had gone, they would have been in really big trouble, because all of them went and just, like, kind of played in the sand, then it wasn't such a big deal, because, you know, they can't put them all in solitary. But I do think, yeah, I think they should have cut it with, because there's, like, at least three characters that are in real big danger by the end of it.
Yeah, definitely, and it's like that, the whole storyline with Pensatucky.
Yes. Oh, and, yeah.
And the guard afterwards, when it's resolved for her, but then now someone else is in danger.
I know, it was
And it, like, it just, like, that really freaked me out, because I was like, well, what are they going to do? Are they just going to be like, well, that's not my problem, like, that's her problem now.
I think basically, yeah, that was what you were supposed to think. So, but it's interesting, like, were they trying to frame that as a success? As like, yay, the problem solved? Or maybe what they should have done is gone, oh, it's a success for them, but actually, you know, it's not improved if someone else. You've just kind of shat on someone else and made somebody else's life worse to improve yourself. And considering they had so many themes about capitalism with the prison becoming private,
yeah,
for them then to not use that as maybe like, not really a parallel. Well, yeah, not what's the word? Not an analogy, but a parallel in that Pensatucky and Boo put somebody else in a bad situation to get themselves out of a bad situation, which is kind of what like the warden of the prison did. He put all of his team in a bad situation to get himself out of a bad situation. Obviously, the situations that they are in, sexual assault and losing your job, are not comparable at all, but they could have kind of maybe pushed that parallel a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
They missed the mark a couple of times.
I think to me it was just they tried to write too many storylines and they didn't give themselves enough time to tie them all together.
Yeah, I think
that was my major takeaway from it. I mean, I definitely enjoyed it. the storyline with Brooke and the cult.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that. That was really like.
With Brooke or with the Amish girl?
Sorry?
With Brooke or with the Amish girl?
Brooke.
Oh yeah, and then yeah, sorry.
When they find her in the library.
Yeah, with whatever Norma, who the actress who plays Norma was in a rock band in the 70s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's pictures of her. She looks so awesome, like kind of very the runaway style with like long hair and no bra and looking amazing. And then now she's playing this sweet little character.
But yeah, I sort of like that. I like that storyline. I'm not really keen on the Pensatucky storyline. I didn't like that.
No, I do see what you mean.
I think they definitely needed, like, a trigger warning of some description.
And also, it's kind of, they used, as Game of Thrones does, as so many things do, they use sexual assault to garner sympathy for a character.
It is the worst thing that can happen.
That is just happening all the time. And that's with this Storm of Spoilers podcast. They don't seem to understand this. And it's like, that's what I meant by, like, saying the show isn't nuanced. They will have a female character go through assault or trauma to garner sympathy for her and to show that someone is evil. And it's just the oldest trick in the book. And it's so, it's so unrealistic and awful and triggering. And so, like, even if there's a trigger warning and you're like, okay, I'm going to watch this, the way they handle it is triggering.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's so many fallacies and misconceptions about trauma and sexual assault in that they're always bad. Like, they're just bad.
It feels like an unfortunate evolution of what happens in a lot of media. I mean, video games are really terrible at this as well. And they tend not to do sexual assault specifically, but games like Max Payne and a lot of other of the generic bearded white male protagonists, their whole raison d'etre is because a woman in their life has been killed.
Well, the other equivalent thing that video games do a lot of is female character is strong because she was sexually assaulted and got past that, and that's how you make her strong. Like, the Tomb Raider reboot is pretty bad for that, where it's like, the Tomb Raider reboot's really bad for that because basically all it does is, hey, this character doesn't want to kill anyone, but she's being sexually assaulted, so she'll do it in self-defense, and oh, it's such a hard thing to do, except now that she's killed someone who was sexually assaulting her, now she can kill remorselessly, kill hundreds of people and feel no feelings over it at all, because, well, she was sexually assaulted and she got past it, so everything's fine.
It is the worst trope ever, and it just comes up again and again and again, and it's like you said, I mean, there's a whole genre, girls with guns, or rape and revenge, like Kill Bill and stuff like that, and it's literally, the narrative is, like, look in Game of Thrones, again, I'm on such a Game of Thrones kick at the moment.
That's completely fine.
It's implied that Daenerys Targaryen is assaulted by her brother, but it's okay because he dies. Like, we're supposed to think it's okay and she'll be over it. Like, if you can get revenge, then that's okay.
Yeah, if your rapist gets killed, then it's like the rape never happened.
Exactly, and everybody knows, like, any kind of trauma ever, whether it's something like sexual assault or you're in an earthquake or anything like that, just getting vengeance or even getting justice doesn't make it okay. It might help or it might make it worse, but it's not going to make it go away. And it's just, we need, and I'm like, it sounds quite, I know this sounds a bit divisive, but we need men to stop writing women characters that are traumatized in those ways. Like, they need to stop. They need to all say, right, I'm not going to do this until I've taken, like, a course on, by women and, well, by non-men who are going to say, this is actually how it's going to happen. And they need to sit down and be told by, like, psychologists and experts in this. And we just need a blanket agreement that basically nobody is going to write about it until they maybe sign an agreement saying, I'm not going to be a douche.
Basically, you want them to have to, like, get a writing sexual assault license that they have had to go do a test for.
Like, it's definitely something that, I mean, obviously it's not the nicest subject ever, and it would have to be handled very carefully, but it's something that I could see Nine Worlds maybe doing a panel on. writing trauma, and it obviously would have to say be 18 plus, and there would have to be huge trigger warnings, and it would be like with the comedy night where somebody was stood at the door and said, you know, if you want to pop out for 5 minutes, I can tell you when they change the subject or blah blah blah. Like, it would have to be, but if it's going to be done anywhere, Nine Worlds would be the best place to do it.
Because it's one of those things where it's almost like we shouldn't avoid having trauma and things like that, because this sometimes comes up in discussions as well, as people lean on like it would be censorship to remove this sort of thing.
Yeah,
and like, we are talking about artistic and creative media, and this is part of the human condition, but the point is to do it properly and almost to take proper ownership of it rather than lazily.
It's not saying stop using this topic, it's saying stop doing this topic without thinking about it properly first, and stop doing the stupid examples.
Yeah.
It's okay, let's stop, evaluate what the problems are, and then you can start once you understand what you're doing.
In the Storm of Spoilers podcast, the guy, they're talking about a sexual assault scene that happened in season 4, and he says, like, at the beginning, because he introduces it obviously, pointlessly because he's so annoying, but he said, like, oh, obviously we're talking about rape and sexual assault in this show, and but it's only in the confines of the show, like, this is a safe space to talk about it, aka you can't have a go at me. And he's like, oh, you know, it's obviously fictional, it happened to fictional characters within this world that is different to ours, blah blah blah. And it's like, how ignorant and disjointed does your own thought process have to be that you don't understand how relevant this is to everyday people? And yeah, Game of Thrones is fictional, it's completely imaginary, but things that happen in a TV show that millions and millions of people watch still have real life repercussions and still have real world repercussions. And I do not understand how people, like, slightly different, but Jeremy Renner, when he called Black Widow a slut and then said, oh, it's a fictional character, it doesn't matter. Jeremy Renner and this guy from Storm of Spoilers have literally made money off people's fascinations with these characters, whether it's Black Widow or whether it's Game of Thrones and Cersei and things like that. Like, the fact that us four are chatting right now, if people weren't into these things and didn't create fandoms, we would not be doing this. And then for people like the guy in Storm of Spoilers and Jeremy Renner to then shit on that sort of cult fascination with these characters and with these worlds, it's just ridiculous. How can you say, oh, it doesn't really affect anyone what happens? Well, clearly it does, else you wouldn't be spending, like, he's on like 4 podcasts to do the Game of Thrones. So how can you say, oh, it doesn't really matter what happens in the real world?
It's just lazy. Like, that's my take on it, is that people think that it being fiction gives them a I was talking to someone on Twitter about this the other day, about how fiction feeds into your sense of reality, you know, and it's really lazy writing to be like, to then turn around and go, oh, well, it's fiction, so it doesn't really matter. Like, you have to take ownership and responsibility for what you decide to do. Mm. Like, as a writer, I don't really know where I was going with that.
That's fine, I can...
As a writer, like, I think a big part of what I do with when I'm writing my book is take ownership of the decisions that I make. Like, I've got this one subplot going on that actually I looked at and I was like, this is actually quite ableist. So I've had to go through and fix it because actually, like, that's not cool.
Mm.
And it's feeding into this... this idea that society has that, like, disabled children are a burden on their guardians. And I don't, even in fiction, you could say, oh, it's fiction and it doesn't really matter. But people read fiction to escape from real life. That's essentially what you're doing, is you go to it to get away from real life, and you don't want to see the same issues that face you in the real world.
Exactly.
In these books. And you, like, creators need to take ownership and responsibility of the decisions that they've made. Rather than saying, like Jeremy Renner, like, oh, well, it's a fictional character. Yes, it is a fictional character, but the issue that you've created is one that faces real-life people all the time.
Exactly.
And you need to take ownership of the fact that that is what you've done.
There's an interesting thing, the Media Diversified writers of color people on their website. They did a series, and it was like three articles about non-white people in sci-fi and fantasy. And I think it was either on that or somebody linked to it and said this, and it was just a quote where it's like, if your idea of a fantasy is one where there aren't any non-white people, as we know sci-fi and fantasy tends to be hugely white, if you want to escape from the real world, why is your idea of an escape and a good place to be and absorb yourself in is a place with no no white people, no non-white people? And it's like, I watched Jurassic World this week, and to me, something like Jurassic World is a form of escapism. You know, I want to relax.
It's a stupid movie that you don't have to think much about. But what? Then there's that, I think we're going to talk about the same scene. It's that scene with the assistant. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to, it's my escape from the real world. So, and then I just get burdened with all of the same real world problems that exist in terms of sexism and oppression. Whereas guys, like if I went with my boyfriend, he gets to watch it and be Chris Pratt and have a whale of a time and be super cool and awesome. And I have to watch it and be either the woman that gets eaten or the lady who is amazing in it. She's so precious. I love her.
She's so great, but she's consistently patronized by Chris Pratt's character the whole way through.
A film with, it's weird that a film with dinosaurs should be so realistic.
Yeah.
Well, the point I was going to make a little while back was just in terms of this whole idea of media not like being written off as just, you know, it's just a story, it's just fiction, it's not real. This is a real problem that a lot of forms of media have when it comes to being taken seriously as art forms, and this sort of flip-flopping that goes back and forth. There is just this whole aspect of media, it doesn't necessarily cause people to have certain attitudes, but it perpetuates existing attitudes, and it perpetuates the idea that, oh, that attitude you have is okay because it's, you know, it's backed up by this piece of media. And I think that this is something that, like, I know the video games industry has a big problem with this idea of, we want to be taken seriously as art. Oh wait, don't hold us seriously. We're just fiction. We're just media. Don't hold us to account for those things. It's just media. And it's this weird back and forth you get where people want to be taken seriously as an art form until they're being held accountable for the things they put in their art, and then it's like, oh no, we're not art. We're just media. Mm.
It's the full implications of owning a topic, basically. Like, literally, that comes with responsibilities. It also comes with benefits and negatives, but you have to own it all the way.
Yes, understand that when you have popular media, that influences people's perceptions of things, and it influences the vernacular that people use and the way that people keep their preconceptions. So
the best way it was explained to me in terms of how narratives affect you is 9/11. Have any of you ever been to New York?
No.
I've been before 9/11, yeah.
Yeah, I went to New York, like, a couple of years ago, but like, I've never been to Ground Zero or anything like that. I've never met anybody who was who was there. I've never met anybody who was like involved in it in any way. Yeah, I can tell you loads and loads of things about 9/11. I can tell you what time of day it was. I can tell you who the suspects were. I can tell you the reaction. I could draw a vague artist's impression of it. Yeah, I've never been there, but the reason I know all this is because I got it through the media. And for all we know, it could never have happened. But for some reason, all the media decided, right, we're going to be on this conspiracy and tell everyone that it did and produce all this fake stuff.
Now, just to clarify now, you don't think that 9/11 didn't happen?
No.
Jet fuel can't melt steel beams.
No, I know that it happened. But the point is we only know about it, us four, who could, you know, hold a conversation about it. We have not necessarily met anybody from it. We only know through the media. And the other thing is grief. Like, I'm quite lucky that nobody very close to me has ever, like, in terms of family or friends, has ever passed away. But I could still write a paragraph on how it feels to grieve because I've read it about it and because I've seen it happen.
Yeah, I mean, people who know me, they know, like, I lost my stepmom in September last year. And it felt exactly how I expected it to feel, you know, like, because as you said, like, we know what, even like before that, I'd never really lost anyone close to me, but you could, as you say, write a paragraph. And when I was going through the grieving process, I guess, like, even now when I have grieving, like, days where I'm still grieving, I'm like, I could, you know, this is exactly like how I read it, you know. I read a book and it was exactly like this.
Well, this is exactly the point, is that what media does is, if you don't have any other reference point for something from either personal experience or anyone you know, a piece of media becomes your reference point for whatever's being portrayed. And, like, looping this back to the, like, the initial, I think, where we started, which was talking about sexual assault in Orange is the New Black and Game of Thrones. If you've never been affected by that personally, and you don't know anyone who's been affected personally, or you don't know anyone who's spoken to you about being affected personally, but you watch a piece of media in which it's represented, that becomes your reference point, and that will inform some of your perspective and some of your beliefs about that subject. And that is why accurate representation is so important, is because if it is your reference point for a topic that you haven't personally experienced, it's really important that your reference point for that real world thing is accurate.
It's just, that's why I find it so bizarre when people don't critique media, because if it's your only reference point for so many things, you've got to be sure they ain't lying.
Like, yeah, but it's only a story.
Exactly. And it's like, well, it may only be a story, but that's your only experience of, you know, a subject, whatever subject, whether it's 9/11 or grief or sexual assault. If that is your only ever experience of it, you better hope to God that it's right. Because, you'd never met a shark. Not that, you know, you really meet sharks. You don't really, like, they don't really go, they're not on Tinder or anything. But say, like, you'd never seen a shark in real life, and all you've ever seen is movies, like cartoons, about how amazing they are. And, you know, only seen cartoons of them, like, anthropomorphized and their friends. And then somebody drops you in a shark tank, like, and you're like, oh, it's okay. They're like dolphins or something. They'll be friendly to me.
And then they eat you.
Exactly. And then you die. And that would be really sad.
So if you have bad representation in your media, it will kill you.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway.
Oh, I feel goodness. Like the Wikipedia article of this discussion would be, see also Fox News.
Oh, goodness. We've got a little bit of time before we wrap up still. So I think there's one film that both Tilly and Kate have seen that might be worth briefly discussing.
Did you watch Spy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Do you want to talk about Spy?
My sister saw it.
It was banging. I loved it.
It was really good.
So convince me why I should watch this.
It's not without its problematic elements.
No, it's very mainstream and American, and I think that lets it down in that respect.
I think the main issue for me was when she comes out of the airport and she's like supposed to look ugly or whatever, and the guys drive past and they're catcalling everyone, and then they skip her and they move on to the next person, and then when she comes out later and she's looking hot, insert quotation marks, they come past again and they're catcalling and they catcall her, and she's like so pleased that she's been catcalled. And I was like, no.
Although it is a comedy, they are clever writers. They could have examined that in a way that she was pleased about it, and somebody went like, why are you pleased about that? And, you know, addressed her own internalized misogyny.
Yeah.
But
are you suggesting an American mainstream comedy would actually look inflexibly at the subject it's attempting to satirize?
It does sometimes. And the way I would compare it, if I was saying to someone, you know, Laura, I think you should go and watch this movie, the way I would compare it is Johnny English.
Okay.
Which is another banging movie.
I love Johnny.
Oh, so good. And it does it in it's an American Johnny English. So whereas Johnny English was parodying Bond, this is parodying like Mission Impossible and Bond and Bourne and all those kind of films that have come out in sort of the last 20, 30 years. But it is very funny. Melissa McCarthy is good in it. Better, I think, in that than she was in, say, Bridesmaids.
Oh, so much better.
She's much more likeable.
Yeah, she's a lot more fleshed out as a person. Like, in Bridesmaids, she was, like, the fat character.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, there's a lot of jokes about her being fat and her being single and all that, but they all get subverted in the end because she does end up being the heroine. Whereas in Bridesmaids, there's a lot of jokes about her being fat and her being single, which don't go anywhere because, like, she gets loads of dogs. And to be fair, that's really cool. Like, yeah. I would love to get loads of dogs. But it just falls
a bit flat. They don't portray getting loads of dogs as a good thing.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
She steals them all.
It's kind of like because she doesn't have a man and therefore she must have loads of dogs, which everybody knows you just want loads of dogs.
You should have but loads. You should be like, yeah, I will. I have loads of dogs now. I will find a man that also wants loads of dogs.
There's a lot of good actors and actresses in it. Rose Byrne is good. Alison Janney is amazing in it. But honestly, although I love Melissa McCarthy, and I do think the fact that in Bridesmaids it's an ensemble, so they didn't have the time or really they didn't care enough to make her a complex fleshed out character. She was just a stereotype. In this, it's just her as the main character. So she gets to be many things. But I will say the standout actor for me in that was Jason Statham.
Oh, he was good. He was so funny.
Absolutely hilarious. Just a parody of every character he has ever played. It was so funny. Like, I would watch it again just for him. Jude Law was good in it, but... And Miranda Hart, she was okay in it.
Yeah,
but...
she's losing a lot of her, what's the word? Like, her newness, if that makes sense. She's the novelty of her is wearing off me now.
It's like, this is still the same joke that you were making, like, however many years ago when it was you first broke out.
American audiences will find her quite funny and quirky and cute because she's British. But as you know, I really like Miranda, the TV show. I think it's a lot of fun to kind of watch with my mom and just not think about things.
Yeah, but then if you watch like her stand-up and stuff, her stand-up is the same jokes that are from the TV show, and she's the same character like in this movie. She's the same character as she is in her TV show, and her book is the same jokes, and it's like she just sort of recycles the same material. And to me, it's getting quite old now.
Because I do think she's a very funny comedian, and I think there's a lot more of her that we might see, and I hope that in the next sort of 5-10 years she her career like gets a kind of revitalization, and I hope she does do even better. But at the moment I do feel like because she is a woman and because she is maybe not conventionally attractive, she's still doing kind of the bridesmaid stuff as it were, but the English version of I am this stereotype and that's it. And it's like, no, there's way more to you, Miranda. Like, show us your love.
You're so funny and clever and, you know, like all these things. And just why are you limiting yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's had good moments from a few panel shows I seem to remember watching. Yes. But yeah, I couldn't watch Miranda the TV series because I'd also heard the exact same material on the radio version of that because she ported it directly from radio. Yeah, so it was exactly the same jokes. It's like, yeah, I've seen this joke now.
I bet it would work quite well on radio, actually.
It did. I think it was better on the radio. I still had to turn it off because it's really not my sort of humour, but at least I could make it through a few episodes.
Yeah. I mean, the TV show, her friend Stevie is in Horrible Histories and things.
Yeah, yeah, she's in a lot of BBC stuff.
I love her.
She's so good. She was in...
Like, I love her. And I love her.
She was in that Mitchell and Webb look as well. She's just...
Really?
Yeah, she's wonderful.
That Mitchell and Webb look is where the name of my corgi comes from. I want a corgi called Sir Digby Chicken Caesar.
Yeah, I thought about that.
And I wanted it. And when I got my rabbit, I was like, oh, maybe we should call him Sir Digby Chicken Caesar. And me and my sister had no idea where we'd got this from. And we thought maybe we'd made it up. And we were like, have we both made up the same name? But this week, I have also had another corgi name suggestion. So rather than choosing, obviously, I'm just going to get two corgis.
Obviously.
So one is going to be called Sir Digby Chicken Caesar. And then I'm going to have a girl dog called Lady Sansa Bark.
Oh, goodness. Cute. You've got that piece of music going through my head now. Oh goodness, such a Digby Chicken Caesar. Anyway, have we got anything else, or is now a good time for us all to wrap up?
Well, I was just going to mention the fact that I've cheated on you guys with I'm afraid I've started another Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
To be fair, we haven't done ours in quite some time. Yeah, so I can't blame you, but
different class. And we're actually playing a different version as well, because I think we were playing version 4 with Helen.
Yes, I believe so.
But we've got a version 5 campaign going within our lightsaber clan now. And it's, I'm playing a human bard who, I'm learning so much about the Dungeons & Dragons world, really, basically, because she's been described as a skill monkey in that, like, all my stats are amazing because I had really good rolls at the start. And yeah, so we had one like fairly long session, actually at our lightsaber teacher's flat, and just like mapping out our position using colored shot glasses, and it was that sort of evening. And yeah, some good times. We had a surprising number of natural 20s. Ooh. Like the elven hunter in our party managing to roll a natural 20 and jumping over the entire party and just like thrusting his sword straight into a pair of orcs. It's just like, Dungeons and Dragons is made of moments like that.
So. And with that, we're going to wrap up for this week then. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. We should do self-promotion. So Tilly, where can people find you and your projects on the internet?
I'm at Gathering Tilly on Twitter, where mainly I talk about my cat and my book. My book you can find at patreon.com/valencekiller. The first 6 chapters are now available for whatever pays you like. I'm just really poor, so please give me money. Yeah, that's it.
Hooray. And what about you, Gemma? Where can we find you on the internet?
You can generally find me around as Raygun Goth, and on YouTube I am The Raygun Goth, which is where I post Let's Plays of City Skylines, which is still continuing, and I'm finally building railways and stuff.
Yay! And Kate, where can we find you on the internet?
It's a bit weird at the moment. I'm at The Geek Agenda UK, which hopefully we'll be having some more topic discussions once I've finished work. But my personal account, @whatkatie_did, is private at the moment. You are more than welcome to request a follow, and I will accept it. But I'm applying for internships and things at the moment, and I don't want them all to find out that I'm, like, fucking weird. It is private at the moment, and, you know, everyone's welcome to retweet things.
Well, what if the people who are trying to get you're trying to get the internship from, what if they request a follow?
Oh, I've got a scanner. I've got an anti-internship people. Anna.
The thing is,
if they already follow me for some reason, then, well, they already know how weird I am, and therefore I take no responsibility.
Exactly.
But yeah, feel free to follow me on those things.
Wonderful. And you can find me on Twitter at Laura K Buzz. That's where you can find me on most things. So Laura K Buzz on Twitter, Patreon, iTunes, YouTube, pretty much everything. So thank you very much for listening, everyone, this week. It's been fantastic to have you all. We will have another episode for you again next week. Bye.
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 Laters.